Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week and next, another in our series of classic talks by progressive political scientist Michael Parenti. This one's titled, The Hidden Ideology of the News Media. It's from 1997, and it's a keeper. I hope you'll stay tuned. Michael Parenti has been an important influence on me and on our show, New World Notes. For the past many decades, the government's official explanation of public policies seems to make no sense whatever, leaving most citizens dazed and confused. Tell me again, why did the United States invade Grenada? Why did we bomb Belgrade, Yugoslavia? Exactly how will cutting taxes for the rich create more jobs for the average American? Nothing made any sense, and the official explanation made things look murkier rather than clearer. Michael Parenti offered a new, simple, and plausible language that explained well the seemingly incomprehensible. Current events started making more sense. It would take too long to go into detail here, but take a listen to Parenti for yourself. See if his way of talking doesn't make more sense than the official explanation. As Parenti has often said, just because you don't know what they're doing doesn't mean that they don't know what they're doing. Today's talk by Parenti is titled, The Hidden Ideology of the News Media. He spoke at the University of Vermont in April 1997. 25 years earlier, that university had fired him for his left-wing political activities, especially his active opposition to the Vietnam War. Now, in 1997, they were honoring him. Here is Michael Parenti.
I'm honored to welcome Michael Parenti to UVM tonight. Michael will speak on the topic, The Hidden Ideology of Mass Media. For those who do not know his work, Dr. Parenti is a nationally known lecturer and scholar, author of numerous books and articles, a political analyst, and a radical activist. I'm proud to present to you tonight, Michael Parenti.
You. It's really, really nice to be here. Has it really been 25 years? You know, it's very depressing, isn't it, Will, that the children of your students are now your students. Isn't that right? On the other hand, it's very inspiring to know that we have another whole generation and the struggle goes on and continues. And that's what really bothers the powers that be, that they have to deal with these human beings who have thoughts and interests of their own. And that's always a problem. One of the great assets they have on their side is the media. Yes, the title was The Hidden Ideology of the News Media, or the Mass Media. But it's so well hidden that the media themselves will maintain they don't have an ideology. They report only the truth. We goes out there, we gets the story, and we writes it. That's how a reporter said it to me. They have no selectivity, no biases. So you have these two basic myths. One is that it's a free and independent press. Two, it's that it's an objective press. We also have a third one, which has become a predominant one, reflective of the conservative domination of the media, namely that it's a liberal media. The idea, the charge that the media is biased in a liberal way, is well known to most Americans. The charge I'm going to make tonight that the media is biased in a right-wing corporate America way is a view not as well known. Which itself, you see, bespeaks of the bias of the media. The reason the first is so well known is because that's what the conservatives want you to know. The reason they're able to get you to know it is because they so dominate the media. They so dominate the media that they can convince you that it's the liberals who dominate the media. Did you get that? I haven't lost anybody yet, all right? It's too early in the talk to lose you. Let's actually look at the media. One of the remarkable things about the commentators in the media is they go from far right to moderate center. You have the Rush Limbaughs, the Bob Inuses, the Bob Grants, or whatever their names are, the Shock Jocks. You've got the McLaughlins. McLaughlin has three shows on television, Don McLaughlin, this gruff right-winger National Review editor. You have William Buckley, you have The Evening with David Brinkley, you have Evans and Novak, and others and others. You get a range of discussion that goes from far right, as I say, to a pale, skittish, centrist, moderate, liberal view, which is always kind of dressing itself up on the right. Rush Limbaugh has, for instance, 600 radio stations. Ralph Nader, who was around 25 years before Rush Limbaugh, who had done nationally known investigative work, his commentaries get on very few radio stations. He has a newspaper column he writes that gets into 20 newspapers. Conservative columnists, their columns are syndicated on an average of 200 to 450 newspapers around the country. So that's the way it goes. There are well-financed right-wing media watch organizations. Reed Irvine. Now, Reed Irvine I've debated a couple of times on panels, and he keeps talking about liberal media and how conservative views are shut out of the media. So you've got all these conservatives all over the media talking about a liberal media. And if you call up and you say, what's so liberal about it when they got people like you all over it? Actually, stations are awash with your commentaries. Irvine, for instance, I said conservative viewpoints are shut out of the media. You have a radio show that's aired on 120 stations. He said, 200. See, his ego was such that he was actually strengthening my argument when he wanted to get the right number. I said, you have a newspaper column that appears in over 90 newspapers. He says, it's 100. I said, well, there's a lot of us on the left, us liberal, progressive, left, radical, Marxist, whatever, all the various variations. A lot of us would love to be shut out in that manner. We really would. Not to be overlooked is the National Empowerment Television, or NET. It's a new cable network. It's available in all 50 states. It offers round-the-clock conservative political commentary nonstop. Newt Gingrich has a show. Hey, there's one you don't want to miss. In the words of its founder, Paul Weyrich, NET is dedicated to countering media news that is riddled with a far-left political bias and unacceptable notions about gender norming, racial quotas, global warming, and gays in the military. These are the mortal dangers that he's facing. I'll quote you David Bergen. David Bergen is editor-in-chief of the Oakland Tribune, out near where I live in the Bay Area, California now. And this is what Bergen says. And this is very interesting because this comes from an editor-in-chief of a mainstream newspaper. And he says, the greatest myth in America, or one of the top five at least, is the notion of the liberal press. That is such a crock. By the way, one thing about some newsmen is that you're impressed by their eloquence of phrasing. That is such a crock. And the media bashing based on this so-called liberalness, Bergen goes on, that guys like Limbaugh get away with attacking. You know what? In all the years I've worked for newspapers, and the total is 18 or 19 of them, I have never worked for a liberal newspaper. Not one. There's only a half dozen in the entire country. There are some 1,700 daily newspapers, and they're all run by Republicans. Why? Because Republicans are the kind of people who own things. He left out a variable there. The rich are the kind of people who own things, and they tend to be Republican. That's why. And I don't know one of them who's going to let some liberal run his newsroom. It ain't going to happen. Well, who owns the big media, the mainstream media that reaches millions of people? The press lords who come to mind are right-wing conservatives or moderately right, maybe. William Randolph Hearst, Henry Luce, Rupert Murdoch, who describes himself not as a conservative but as a radical conservative, meaning a very extreme, tense conservative. Sulzberger, Annenberg. People of markedly conservative hue who, by the way, leave their ideological imprint on the editorial news. Sulzberger used to call up the editorials for the next morning that were going to go in the New York Times, and he would go into them. He's the publisher, right, and directly going in and interfering, and sometimes even on the front page. His son is taken over. Punches, the old man is retired. The young one is even more conservative. He says he meets with his editorial board every day. Rupert Murdoch, who probably owns more media in the world than any other individual, owns almost all the media of Australia, was an Australian, came to the U.S., found there were restrictive laws against how much media a non-U.S. citizen can own, so he became a citizen within a month. Most people have to wait a number of years, you know, green card, residency, all that stuff. He got it like that, and owns enormous numbers of newspapers and TV stations. He was interviewed once. Interview was carried in Vanity Fair. The question was, you're considered to be politically conservative. To what extent do you influence the editorial posture of your newspapers? And I thought you'd get that usual blather about, well, of course, I respect the editorial integrity and independence and professionalism of my editors and blah, 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 blah. He didn't say anything like that. He responded with rather refreshing candor. He said, to what extent do I influence my editorial policies of my newspapers? Considerably. My editors have input, but I make the final decision. That's very refreshing, you know, when they come right out and they say what really happens. I do it, understand? You do what I say because I control your career, your job. And my control of your job and your salary gives me control of your mind, too. And if there's some kind of incongruity there and clash, then your mind goes out the door with your butt, you see. The boards of directors of print and broadcast news organizations are populated by representatives from Ford, General Motors, General Electric, General Dynamics, Dow Corning, Alcoa, Coca-Cola, Philip Morris, ITT, IBM, AT&T, and other corporations. So these boards are filled with the representatives of corporate America. That's your free and independent media. You see, the media in this country are not close to corporate America. They're not friendly to corporate America. They're not inclined or biased toward corporate America. They are corporate America. They are multinational giant corporations, and their boards are inhabited with the same people who inhabit the boards, these interlocking directorates who inhabit the boards of all the other giant corporations and come from these other corporations. Among the major stockholders of the three largest broadcast networks are Chase Manhattan, J.P. Morgan, and Citibank. NBC is owned by General Electric. CBS is owned by Tisch. ABC, Capital Cities, is owned by Disney. GE and Disney are the two most conservative corporations that exist. Fox Network is owned by Rupert Murdoch. What's the free independent media we're talking about? And these people appoint the presidents of the corporations, who appoint the bureau chiefs, who appoint the top editors, who appoint the reporters. If you look at the organization of any news organization, it looks like the army, top-down command right down along the way. And their profits are as high as anything in corporate America, and the degree of merger and concentration is higher than it is in finance capital and in manufacturing capital. The media are highly profitable, highly concentrated. Given that distribution of ownership, it's not surprising that labor is regularly downplayed, the concerns of labor. In this last election, for instance, you remember the AFL-CIO said, we're going to get political, we're going to go out there, and we are pledging, the story got around all the media, $35 million we will spend in the campaign. And suddenly the terms were being revised. Big labor is influencing, flexing its muscles in the campaign. They're going to spend $35 million. You could not have missed it. It turned out they spent about $25 million. But it was all over the media about big labor. Let me tell you something, folks, that in the state of California and in the state of Florida, there were corporations that spent $40, $50, $60 million in California to defeat a single-payer health program for the citizens of the state of California, in Florida to defeat protection of the wetlands and environmental laws. They spent more money to defeat little state propositions on the ballot in those states for a few propositions than labor spent in all over the country. But you wouldn't have known it. There were no big headlines about big capital. You heard about big labor. Did you hear about big capital spending 10 times more than anybody else? For both parties, buying politicians of all stripes and wedding them to their way. The concerns of labor are your concerns. They're the concerns of ordinary working people. They're the concerns about wages. They're the concerns about work conditions. They're the concerns about job opportunities. The concerns about consumer safety, occupational safety, environmental protection. Those are the things that labor unions, especially the more progressive labor unions, have been fighting for and talking about for years. You wouldn't know it. It's not in the business-owned media. You've got a business section. Go buy a newspaper tomorrow and pick up that newspaper. You'll find a business section for that 2, 3, 4% that own about 80% of the capital in America. Where's the labor section? Where's the labor news? Where are the concerns of working people? Jonathan Tassini, head of the National Writers Union, my union, I'm a member of it. I'm a writer, I thought I'd unionize, why not? I believe in it. He studied all reports dealing with workers' issues carried by ABC, CBS, NBC, Evening Television News, during one whole year. And he defined labor issues rather widely. It included a few consumer issues and child care issues. It came to only 2.3% of total coverage. We're not even talking about how they were covered, just that there was even any mention. 2.3% of the total news coverage was for labor's issues. For that 120 million people who work for a living, 140 million, whatever it is now. No wonder another survey found that only 6% of business leaders in America thought that media treatment accorded them was poor, while 66% said it was good or excellent. Another influence on the media, a conservative influence, are the corporate advertisers. They exercise a considerable influence. Todd Gitlin interviewed these network bosses and said, to what extent, was entertainment TV, said, to what extent do your advertisers influence your decisions regarding what you put in your programs? And again, I thought you'd hear the usual blather of, well, it can be a pressure occasionally, but that's the exception. We have our individual standards and all that. Every one of them said, all the time. To what extent? We always keep them guys. Are you kidding? Those are our accounts. Are you kidding? They pay the bills all the time. You bet you. We watch out all the time as to what bothers them or doesn't bother them. In fact, a lot of our programming isn't for you. It is to please our advertiser. It's not to please the public, necessarily. And often the advertiser does come in and threatens and cancels accounts, not generally because their product is being poorly reflected, but more often because they perceive that there are liberal tendencies creeping into news reports and commentaries or into the particular shows, whatever else. Religious media manifests the same imbalance. How many of us have heard of the Christian Right? I bet everybody has. They have a whole network, the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN, Pat Robertson. They have several $1 billion worth of media. They have hundreds of radio stations. 10% of all radio outlets in America are controlled by the Christian right-wingers. 14% of the nation's television stations are owned and controlled by the Christian right-wingers. Have you ever heard of a Christian left? There happens to be a very substantial Christian left in America. Liberation theology, people who believe in progressive reform, people who believe that the word of Christ means the social gospel, that you live Christ out in the street, that you find and you work with other people in need and you work for social justice. Where are they? They don't own any networks. That's right, because big money doesn't back a Christian right. They consider them communist, Christian left, I'm sorry. They consider a Christian left communistic. Big money backs the Christian right and gets them out there in the media, and those are the people who are heard, those are the people who get the subscriptions, those are the people who then rally the souls. A favorite conservative hallucination is that the public broadcasting system, PBS, is a leftist stronghold. There are a few occasionally good documentaries on PBS, although two of the very best that I can recall, which won Academy Awards, Deadly Deception and Panama Deception, both won Academy Awards for full-length documentary features, have never appeared on PBS except one or two local stations. In fact, more than 70% of PBS's primetime shows are funded either completely or in major part by four giant oil companies. No wonder we often refer to PBS as standing for Petroleum Broadcasting System. PBS public affairs programs are underwritten Remember, you know when they say our underwriters? You watch PBS, don't you? Occasionally, you know, our underwriters are, this is such a genteel term, they mean advertisers. Our filthy rich corporate advertisers are, they don't want to come right out and say that, are General Electric, General Motors, Metropolitan Life, PepsiCo, Mobil, Payne Weber, Exxon, and the like. A study of these shows by one media watchdog group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, found that corporate representatives constituted 44% of the sources about the economy. Public interest advocates accounted for 3%, while labor representatives were virtually shut out and non-existent. Another thing is the appearance of false diversity, I would call it. I think I call it, in Inventing Reality, I call it false balancing. You can watch a talk show or a panel, and there'll be two, three, four people. You watch Nightline, he says, we have so-and-so from here, we have so-and-so from there, and they'll get into arguments with each other, and you can sit there, and you are being reassured, you see, there is openness and diversity in our media, difference of opinion. I heard a debate one time on the David Brinkley show. It was between, one of them was Elliot Abrams, and I forget who the other guy was. No, Abrams, well, Abrams was in the State Department, he wasn't in the Pentagon, so it wasn't Abrams, it was that guy named Perez. And I forget the other fellow's name. One of them was arguing that the escalated level of defense spending under the Reagan administration, up to $300 billion, almost $300 billion a year, was sufficient, and the escalation was a good thing. The other one was arguing that the escalation was a good thing, but we should escalate even more and spend still more in defense spending. So those were the two sides of the argument. And it reminds you that, you know, when you hear two sides of an argument, you're not hearing all sides of an argument. And so again, you see, that whole other part of the spectrum, that whole public interest, progressive left part, has been amputated and thrown out of the picture. Crossfire is a very good example. Michael Kinsley against Pat Buchanan. And Michael Kinsley had a moment of truth. He said something that was very, very true. He said as follows. If you watch Crossfire, they say, on the left, Michael Kinsley. On the right, Pat Buchanan. They have new people now, I know. I try not to watch that show. I've been on it twice. It's a screaming feast, you know. You sit there and you got one conservative here screaming, you got the other one here screaming, and the left that day was Tom Brandon, who really looked almost like he was giving up the ghost. They just sit there and, well, I don't know, gee. And the right was Robert Novak. And I finally turned to Robert Novak. I said, are you going to let me finish a sentence, or is this a screaming match? He said, you all finish a sentence, but first we have to cut for commercial. You know? And this is the way it is. And try to develop a thought is impossible. So you just screaming, no, that's not true. Yes, it is. No, it is. And that sort of thing. This is what passes for discourse, for the universe of political discourse in a democratic citizenry. We're supposed to be informed and make up our minds about certain things looking at this kind of thing. Did I tell you what Kinsley said? Or I forgot. You're not the only one getting old. We're all getting old. Kinsley made this point. He said, Buchanan is much further to the right than I am to the left. And that's exactly the point, you see. That what passes for the liberal or left opinion is really a skittish, very nervous, centrist position that's constantly dressing up its right, that's constantly worrying that it might not be seen as too far out here, which is not the right. The right goes as far right as it wants to go. So then even what passes for liberal opinion in the media must take place within a conservative framework. Not surprisingly, then, public discussion is heavily skewed to the right. On foreign affairs, the media's role as cheerleader of the national security state and free market capitalism is without restraint. Virtually no positive exposure has ever been given to an indigenous third world revolutionary or reformist struggles, or to protests at home and abroad against U.S. overseas interventions. U.S. military undertakings in the Vietnam War, the invasion of Grenada and Panama, the Reagan intervention against Nicaragua, the Gulf War massacre, all these undertakings are portrayed as arising from noble, if sometimes perhaps misplaced, intentions. The whole critique, the whole debate during the Vietnam War, I remember, was between those people who said we could win the war and those people who said we could win the war. You see. Now, the assumption of the second was if we could, there'd be no argument then, you see. But there wasn't all of us, the millions of us who are out in the streets getting beaten up by the police, getting arrested and all other things, including me, the millions of us who said there shouldn't be a war, whether you could win it or lose it. And the horror of it was that you might even win it. That war was immoral. It was homicidal. It was killing hundreds of thousands of people. We now see 2 million Vietnamese died in that war. The United States killed 2 million Vietnamese. The Nazis killed, you know, millions of people. We see that as a horrible thing. This was seen in our media as well-intentioned struggle, but it went awry. The Vietnamese weren't ready for democracy, it seems. We tried to bring them democracy with those B-52s and napalm and rapid fire deployment forces and free fire zones and all that. But the damn fool people just didn't want to come to their senses. You've all heard about Bosnia, haven't you? Who hasn't heard about Bosnia? Raise your hand. Ah, see? Right back there. You could leave. Okay. How many has heard about Mozambique? You've heard about people dying in Bosnia. You've heard about people dying in Rwanda. Well, in Mozambique, there was something like 1 million people died. In Angola, there was something like 3 million in wars that were being fought, financed by the CIA. Not a word about it. The massive killings and slaughters that went on by mercenary forces throughout the country, the atrocities, unspeakable stuff, it went on for years. Within a six-month period, 600,000 people killed in Angola. Not a word about it, because the media didn't talk about it. So you see, they may not predetermine what you think, but what they do is they can prefigure what we think about. We talk about those things, maybe not exactly the way they might want us, but they seem to set the agenda for what we believe is important. And when you ask about all these other issues, they'll say, well, look, you know, we have a limited amount of time and space. We just can't cover everything. We have to be very selective and careful, and we've got to compress and condense things. Isn't that right? Haven't you noticed that selective, compressed, and condensed story just recently about the Heavenly Gate cult? Right? Wasn't that compressed and condensed? It was only about a week of 24 hours a day. We had interviews of relatives of friends who knew somebody who had been close to someone else who was in the cult. Interviews of stock boys who worked in stores where cult members had shopped in, they think, you know. Right? I mean, really, this is the media that doesn't have enough time to cover everything. And they went on and on and on about these things. Meanwhile, not a word about Mozambique.
Michael Parenti at the University of Vermont in April 1997. He's speaking on the hidden ideology of the news media. Please come back next week for part two of this fine lecture. And even if you don't, I thank you for listening to New World Notes. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. My name is Kenneth Doust. My advice is as follows. Illegitimate non carborundum. Question authority. Save water. Shower with a friend. There's another old one. And please come back again next week. Ciao.